I'm Dan Hughes in the Old Time Radio Corner. The creator of the old time radio show, Leave It to the Girls, originally saw the show as a serious discussion program with four women offering their suggestions for solving problems sent in by listeners. But surprisingly, the show turned out to be both informative and humorous, with wit often blending heavily into the practical help the women suggested. The show ran on Mutual from 1945 to 1949, and panelists included Lucille Ball, Dorothy Kilgallen, Jinx Falkenberg, and several others. A fifth panelist, a man, was thrown in to represent the male side of the equation, and he was given a whistle that allowed him to interrupt the women whenever he wanted to say something. Representing the men were such guests as George Jessel and Henry Morgan. This episode of Leave It to the Girls aired on December 8, 1945.
Mutual presents Leave It to the Girl. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Andre Baruch welcoming you to another session of radio's first round table of romance with Paula Stone, Dorothy Kilgallen, Florence Pritchett, Robin Chandler, and Eloise McElhorn. Our special guest tonight, here to defend the men of America, is the associate editor of Life magazine and popular man about town, George Fraser. And now the girl who asked of stage, screen, and radio, and co-producer of the Broadway hit The Red Mill, Paula Stone.
Thank you, Andre Baruch, and good evening, everyone. Just before we went on the air, we gave our special guest for tonight, George Fraser, all of his instructions. And as usual, he is seated there at a table by himself with his own microphone. And he has been given a silver horn, which is guaranteed to stop the show at any point that he wants to disagree with the girls. So from this point on, George Fraser is on his own. And now, George, if you don't mind, we'll get on with the show. Here is our first question from Mrs. Zoe Dunaway of Atlanta, Georgia, who writes, "My daughter insists upon going to New York to seek a career as an actress or a model. She is 20, intelligent, extremely pretty, and ambitious. Should we try to stop her from leaving her good home or give her money to try her wings? Frankly, girls, please tell a worried mother and father. Do we have anything to fear? What are the dangers of New York? And is it as wild as the stories we read?" Well, I think that's a very interesting question. Robin, what do you say?
Well, there's a lot of wildlife in the woods of any city. I don't care whether it's New York or Atlanta or any place. I'd give the girl the chance and let her come to New York. And I would tell her, rather than how wild it is, that she's in for a lot of hard work and a lot of heartbreaks. And give her some spunk and some feeling of not being homesick and not being afraid to take it on the chin. I think it's a great thing for a girl, and I think if she has potentialities, that they may come out in a city like New York if she gets a good job.
Well, I think that's a very sensible, down-to-earth answer. What do you say, Dorothy?
I agree with Robin. I think that they ought to give her a fund to start with so that she doesn't have to worry too much, and let her see how she can use all this intelligence and ambition that her mother says that she has. I think that if her mother doesn't have any worries about the girl, she doesn't have to have any worries about New York.
I see. I'd like to point out one question to all of you on the board here. One of the questions that she puts in this letter is, what are the dangers of New York? Now, we really haven't answered that. What do you say, Florence?
Well, I don't think for a girl whose mother admits that she is 20 years old, intelligent, and ambitious, I don't think that there are dangers. I think the danger is that the dangers perhaps she means are that the girl might go off on a track and spend a lot of time in nightclubs or wasting her time on foolish people, you know.
Uh-huh.
But for a girl who is intelligent, I don't think she'd do that.
Well, Eloise, you
have...
Well,
I don't think there are any real dangers here or it's so wild. I've lived here all my life and nothing violent has ever happened to me. I think that they should, let her come and be sure and tell her that they're on her side because, after all, even though it isn't dangerous, I will admit there are a lot of wolves around and she needs a few kind words from home because all she'll get from them is a whistle.
Yes, George Fraser.
Well, I was going to say that, I don't think that New York is particularly wild. I mean, it has no Sonny Wise Carver, all these small towns that I know of are much wilder than New York. I think it's entirely up to the girl if she has any sense. She's not going to be wolfed.
She's not going to be wolfed. Well, it's, you know, you sort of have to go around and not speak to any men if you're not going to be wolfed. Don't you find it that way, Robin?
Well, there's so much propaganda about the wild and wooliness of New York, and that's what it is, just propaganda. I would think the only thing a girl would have to worry about would be losing her perspective, believing all this idle chatter about the gay life in New York.
Well, Florence is waving her hand madly, so what do you say, Florence?
Well, I was just going to add to that. It's only because the people that serve for that propaganda are well known so that the other papers in the small towns can pick it up and write about it. But it doesn't mean that in Atlanta, Georgia, they aren't wild. They just are Mr. Smith and the Atlanta Country Club, maybe, you know, or something like that. It's people are the same all over, whether it's New York or Podunk.
I think maybe they read Dorothy Kilgallen's column and then they say, ooh, that wicked New York.
Don't blame me.
Well, now let's go on to our next question from Miss Florence Newman of Brooklyn, New York, who writes, my fiancé is returning from overseas. The impossible housing situation has given us three romantic prospects. Should we put off our marriage until apartments are available or live with my family, or should we pitch a tent someplace? That is really a sad problem. What do we say, Dorothy?
I think they should pitch a tent someplace. Because I think certainly they shouldn't put off their marriage just because of some little outside thing like not being able to find an apartment. And
I'm sure you have an apartment, Dorothy. You wouldn't say it that carelessly.
I don't think that people should compromise, if possible, on privacy when they're first married. So I think that they ought to find a little tent.
They certainly have to pitch a tent to pitch a little woo, don't they?
Yeah.
Robin?
Well, maybe I'm dramatizing a little, but I think it's pretty tragic when you think of a boy coming from overseas and all he wants is a place to take his future bride. I don't think it's a question for us. I think it's an obligation for Mr. and Mrs. America to meet.
Well, yes, it is, but on this particular program, Miss Florence Newman is only asking us. So what do you say, Louise?
Well, I think that they definitely shouldn't wait. I mean, you know, they say he who hesitates is lost, and she certainly doesn't want to lose a good man these days. Even if they have to live with her family, it certainly won't be forever. And I'd certainly rather have a man and be surrounded by my relatives than just be surrounded by my relatives.
I think that certainly answers Miss Newman of Brooklyn. So let's go on to our next letter. Miss Thordis Sully of Mansfield Center, Connecticut writes, if your boyfriend is supposed to be going steady with you and then you see him in the movies with another girl, what should you do? Now, what would you do? What would you do, Dorothy?
Well, in the first place, you should never use the term going steady. That is the most revolting expression known to man, I think.
Well, she just wants to express that he isn't supposed to be cheating. How would you express it, Dorothy?
Well, I mean, either they're engaged or they're not engaged. If they're engaged, well, then she has a right to resent it if he's in the movies with another girl. Then she ought to get unengaged or disengaged, whichever it is. But if they're not engaged, he has a perfect right to be there.
I see. What do you say, Eloise?
I think it depends upon whom she is with when she sees him. If she's with another guy, I'd just be generous and wouldn't even mention it.
Oh, yes, George?
Well, I was going to say that if she really wants to be smart about the thing, the only way to handle it from a male's point of view is for the girl not to mention it to her boyfriend or if she's engaged to him, but to appear, have him see her with somebody else and arouse jealousy if it's the point that he doesn't care for. I mean, there's nothing she can do.
Nothing she could do anyway. But that's sort of playing at the old army game. But what do you say, Florence?
Well, I think the girl ought to be very thankful that he isn't in the back of a rumble seat. She ought to be glad he only has the other girl out in the movies, for heaven's sake. You can't do very...
Oh. Florence really broke up the board of sexperts on that one. So while they're pulling themselves back together again, I'll go on to the next letter. From Mrs. Mary Nadler of the Bronx, who writes, my husband has a friend who is a bachelor and intends to stay one. He dines with us at least once a week and drops in frequently. He always brags about his freedom, his good times, and tells my husband how much he's missing by being married. We invariably find some sort of a spat going on after his visit, and it takes days, well, anyway, a day or two, to restore harmony. Since he is a close friend of my husband's, how can I solve this problem? Well, now, I really, on the surface, that might seem amusing, but that is quite a serious problem when a bachelor comes in and disrupts your married life. What do you say, Eloise?
Well, I think what you should do is get a friend of hers in. I mean, a female to cope with the bachelor. I mean, you know, a man will always open his mouth and talk if he thinks he can get away with it, but if he has a female to cope with, he isn't so apt to. I think this will probably not only solve the problem, it'll end their spats and give the bachelor some of his own.
Yes, George?
I have a suspicion from hearing the question that this woman, there's something lacking, that she probably insults the friend. I don't think the husband can be that much of a heel that he would do this. It's almost like a Mr. Manningham thing, as though he's trying to torture her.
Oh, well, of course, I knew you'd stick up for the husband, George. But what do you say, Florence?
Well, I don't think she should pay a great deal of attention to it. I think there are a lot of bachelors who are not contented. And if he loved his freedom so much, why does he always call on married people who deliberately go into homes of friends of theirs who are married and just because they're men, they want to sort of knock all the happy security apart. I think she just ought to laugh at him and say, isn't he silly? He eats beans out of a can at night.
Well, apparently, though, I mean, she says that doesn't do any good. What do you say, Robin?
Well, I'd save an argument. For heaven's sakes, your husband can have friends that you're not particularly fond of. But I wouldn't argue with my husband about it. I'd accept it as such. I mean, everything can't go as smooth as glass all the time.
Mm-hmm. And, Dorothy, what do you say?
Well, I think the whole problem would be solved if she took that night out to spend with the girls playing Mahjong, as Andre always says we girls do, and just let them talk it over by themselves. Then she would know what he had said, and she wouldn't feel badly, and she and her husband wouldn't quarrel.
Well, Andre wants to answer you, Dorothy. This is unusual, but do join us, Andy.
I don't exactly want to answer Dorothy. I just wanted to say perhaps the fellow is trying to help his friend out of a dilemma. Maybe. I don't believe in such a thing as a discontented bachelor. There's no such animal. So he's probably trying to help the fellow out, start a spat, split him apart, and the both of them go off and be happy.
And you think that's all right, Andy?
I don't say it's all right. I just thought it might be his idea.
Well, Dorothy must have an answer for that.
I have a dreamy new theory.
You have?
Yes. I think that he's in love with a wife. The bachelor is in love with a wife, and he's trying to break up the marriage so that he can get her.
May I sum that up, Mrs. Mary Nadler, and say the bachelor is in love with you. Stand your ground. Now, our next question comes... I see we are asked not to mention names on this one, so we'll just tell you we have a letter from a girl who says, please help me. I am 19 years old, attractive, nice personality, dress well, intelligent, and am considered to have more sex appeal than Lauren Bacall and to have and have not. Too bad she doesn't send her phone number, isn't it, boy? She writes on, still, I can't get any man interested enough to marry me. They all seem to be wolves. Should I change my personality, try to reduce my sex appeal, or what? Florence.
I think that young lady ought to look in a mirror and study herself. Not that she isn't all of the things she says she is, but any girl who, number one, thinks she has all those points that she mentions, which makes her pretty near too perfect. She's too perfect for a man, so she'll never get one.
Well, she seems to be bothered by wolves. I mean, she can't be too unhappy. Robin?
Oh, I don't think she's perfect. I think she's kind of overplaying her role of Lauren Bacall. That's what's wrong with her.
Maybe
and
she
if I were a man in the same position, I think I'd be a wolf, too.
Maybe she's whistling in a sour note.
Dorothy, I'm sorry, Dorothy. We have to let our... will you blow that really loud, George?
I was going to say that the girl sounds just awfully dumb to me. She doesn't... she thinks too much about her appearance instead of trying to please...
I see.
...please the man and talk about something substantial.
Uh-huh. You think maybe it's a lack of intelligence. Of course, that's a man's point of view. You don't mind my saying that, do you, George?
Well, I think in this particular girl that she worries so much, and I think when you compare yourself with Bacall, that you're going pretty tops. I mean, there's only one Bacall.
That's a favorite of yours, is it, George?
Yeah, by all means.
Dorothy, what do you say?
I think that we're just wasting a lot of valuable time worrying about her. I think that she's perfectly satisfied with herself, and even if she never finds a man, she'll be happy just all by herself.
Well, our next letter comes from Maxine Lewis of Colorado Springs, who writes, how can a woman make her presence felt when she enters a room filled with people? I have one good idea, but I won't say it. Florence, what do you say?
She could walk in on her hands, of course.
Yes, she could try that, Eloise.
Well, to go off the track a little bit for me and be serious, I think by being sure of yourself, I mean by just knowing that you're going to like everybody in the room and that everybody's going to like you and you're going to have a wonderful time. And also, of course, it never hurts to wink at the three most attractive guys. Whence they go, so goes the party.
I see. Florence, what?
Eloise is an awful fast sort of one at casing the joint if she can walk in a room and get the three most attractive guys immediately and wink at them. I'd like to learn her method.
Why, Florence, it's easy. Even being nearsighted, I always see those.
George blew very faintly on that silver horn. Don't let us scare you, George.
All right. I wanted to say that one of the qualities that I find in a woman, if she comes into a room and she remembers people's names... most women don't. They look at you and give a vague glance and then go on to somebody else. And if they make the point, take the trouble to remember each individual's name, it endears them.
I see. I don't think you're endearing yourself to our board of experts. They all wave violently every time you finish, particularly Florence. Yes, Florence?
I wondered, I haven't heard any girls introducing other men as men do to girls as Miss Mm-hmm, like that, you know. They forget their name. Men never remember names. All they want to do is call you honey.
Yes, Robin?
Well, this woman is looking for a personal effect that will create an impression when she walks in a room. That's a mistake. I'd just tell her to be natural. There are a lot of things you can strike poses when you get, you know, right at the door, and you can wear fantastic hats. There are all ways to attract attention.
Excuse me, Paula.
Yes?
May I ask a question?
Yes, of course, Andy. What is it?
Well, did you ever stop to wonder what it's like for me to have to stand here every week and listen to everybody else answer the questions while I'm dying to get a word in edgewise?
No, that never occurred to me.
I thought not. Well, as a matter of fact, some of the answers I think of strike me, anyhow, as being pretty funny, so it's sort of a shame to waste them.
Oh, well, that is a shame, Andy. We'll fix that up right now. I have a question here that I've been looking at for weeks, and I'm scared to death to ask, but, well, since you've put yourself out on a limb, here is a special one just for you.
Oh, swell.
Yeah. A perplexed woman out in Podunk asks, what kind of a husband would you advise me to get? Question mark.
Well, Paula, I don't know what's worrying you on that one. The answer's so simple.
Well, it's not worrying me, Andrew, but the answer is so simple. Why don't you tell our friend out in Podunk?
Well, my advice to this woman is to get a single man and leave the husbands alone. Broke myself up on that one. But seriously, folks, if you have a problem, or if you're concerned about a friend's problem, won't you write us a letter? If your question is used on this program, you will receive $5 in victory stamps, plus a $25 victory bond to the sender of the question which is chosen by our male guest as the pulse stopper. That is, the question which, in his opinion, stimulates the best all-around discussion. Every letter is carefully read, and sooner or later, we hope to get around to all the questions sent in. So, just keep listening and writing. And now, to get on with the show, here is your hostess, Paula Stone.
Well, our next letter also requests that we do not mention any names, so of course we will not. However, the sender writes, my husband won't take me out, even to a movie, because he wants to spend his time drawing. He says this relaxes him. Now, I wouldn't mind so much, but all he draws are bugs and spider webs, and they give me the creeps. What have I done to deserve this? Have you any practical ideas on how I can get him to take me out? Bugs and spider webs. Now, what do you say, Eloise?
It's a cinch. She should take him to a flea circus.
Oh, well, I don't think that really answers the question. Dorothy?
I think that she won't get anywhere until she takes him to a psychiatrist. There's got to be a reason for that.
Yes. Well, now, I think that's a very sensible answer myself, Dorothy. I would say definitely take him to a psychiatrist. I see where he gets all those bugs and spider webs. And, Robin, what do you say?
He sounds like a Jekyll and Hyde type, you know.
Well, I don't think he's carried it that far. He just won't take her to the movies. He hasn't choked her yet. Eloise. Oh, I'm sorry, Eloise. Mr. Frazier blew the silver horn.
I wonder if the woman has any sort of hobby herself. It seems to me as if she just sits home and watches him draw instead of knitting or something herself.
I see. Well, Florence, do you have an answer for George?
I'd like to ask Mr. Frazier what hobby you would suggest she take up to equal the bugs and spider webs.
Knitting.
knitting. Oh, coats for the spiders.
Eloise? Well, I think she could get him on the age angle. I mean, tell him that it's really too bad he's reached the age where he has to stay home drawing instead of going out and doing things. I think soon she'll find him that he's taking her to the spots instead of just staying home and making spots on the bugs.
Well, I don't think that that really answers this lady's question as much as Dorothy's did. Robin, did you want to add to
I think it's very hard to answer because I don't think the man's normal myself.
Andy, yes.
Robin, I resent that, not being normal. I draw myself at home. My wife doesn't resent it. But I think what should happen is the girl ought to take up art and start drawing handsome men, and he'll realize there's something wrong and probably start drawing handsome women. They'll both decide there are other things outside of bugs in the world, and they'll both go out.
I think you've helped us, Andy, with that. Thanks for joining in. Now, here's a letter from Mrs. Harry Sweeney of Bayside, Long Island, who writes, I once heard a big businessman say, I wouldn't hire a homely girl. Do you think this is the usual male attitude, and if so, why? I'll repeat that. I wouldn't hire a homely girl. Dorothy, what do you say?
He just sounds like a man who's not afraid of his wife.
Yes, he certainly does, but she asks a question, our listener.
Oh, yes, I don't think that that's the general male attitude. I think that most of them would like to hire only pretty girls if they were also efficient, but I think that a lot of them just wouldn't dare because the little woman would be down to inspect the secretary's office.
I see. Well, what do you say? Yes, George.
I can't seem to blow it loud enough.
You're very weak on that horn.
It's my own impression that homely girls are much better secretaries because they put their mind on their work and don't primp and so forth.
Uh-huh.
Very good.
George, knowing that you are a big executive at Life magazine, I know you have that problem. What do you say, Florence?
I think Mr. Fraser is crazy. Homely girls are not better secretaries necessarily, but they don't have men breathing down their neck when they're trying to take dictation like a pretty girl does.
That could be, Mr. Fraser. Eloise?
Well, I think it's true that men only want to hire pretty girls, chiefly because they think they're so dreamy themselves, ha-ha, that they want to be surrounded by attractiveness. And also, they can always use it as a good excuse. You know, when they make a mistake, they can say, oh, well, you know, a pretty girl, nothing behind the face. I mean, at least we have pretty faces, though.
Oh, we do? Well, I'm afraid that we're going to have to hold the discussion there because from this point on, we have the Man Strikes Back department. And this department is a special concession made to our male guest to balance the scale, so to speak. Now, George Fraser has a chance to ask any question about women that he wants, favorable or unfavorable. But before you take over, George, which question is your choice for the Pulse Stopper tonight?
I thought the one about the woman whose husband had the friend. The bachelor friend was the...
Oh, yes, the bachelor friend. Well, that was Mrs. Mary Nadler, Nadler, of the Bronx. Well, that's fine. That means that Mrs. Nadler will receive a $25 victory bond as a bonus, in addition to $5 in victory savings stamps. And $5 in victory stamps will go to all other senders of questions used on tonight's program. Well, now, girls, get ready to hold your own while our guest, George Fraser, puts us on the spot. You know, up until now, he's been defending the man's point of view. Now he gets a chance to make all of us explain some of the mysterious feminine whys and wherefores by asking us some questions about women which seem to puzzle men the most. Go ahead, George Fraser.
Well, the first one, Paula, is a woman is delighted when her children come home for lunch, but when her husband, the poor guy who slaves to buy the food, who maintains the home and protects his family from want, when the husband decides to come home for a bite of lunch, not only his wife, but all her friends get furious. Robin?
Poor Mr. Fraser, I'll be crying on your shoulder in another minute. He protects her from want, you know. Well, in the first place, a man comes home in the middle of the day where a wife is taking care of all her household chores. He interrupts everything. He charges in the kitchen. He throws dishes around. He tries to fix his own lunch, which is the biggest fiasco in the world, and she is left with 3 days' work on her hands.
Dorothy?
Well, that's not exactly my feeling, but after all, she has got the children, too, as well as her husband, and husbands are always coming around in the kitchen and trying to kiss you on the back of the neck or on the ear or something, and you can't get the lunch for the children.
Well, I've come home myself when I thought I'd make my wife happy, And she looks at me and says, what are you doing here?
See, you could show a wife a man who you could shove a peanut butter sandwich in his hand and say, get outdoors. Maybe you wouldn't mind so much, but they have such funny ideas when they come home for lunch. They want to lounge around and have a wonderful time.
Eloise?
Well, I don't think it's true. Of course, I'm not married, so I really shouldn't even answer this question. But I certainly wouldn't mind if my husband came home for lunch. As a matter of fact, I'd rather have him come home for lunch and know he was there than out eating with some other girl.
Paula.
Well, I just wanted to ask you, George, you say in your question that it not only makes her furious, but all of her friends. May I ask, what are all of her friends doing at her house at noon?
They're usually playing bridge when they should be home making peanut butter sandwiches for their own people. Coming out to eat. She will order everything in the menu and then leave half of it. I never noticed a woman doing this at lunchtime when she's paying the check. Paula?
Well, George, you say you never notice it at lunchtime when she's paying the check. Do you mean that at lunchtime you let her pick up the check?
No, I watch them, though. And another thing, this does happen all the time, and it's like the thing when you go out to dinner with a woman, and you ask if she'll have something first, and she says, oh, no, and you order shrimp cocktail, and when it comes, she says, oh, that looks lovely. Let me have some, and before you know it's gone. Dorothy?
George, I can't understand why anybody as cute as you with such curly hair has so much trouble with women.
Eloise?
Well, it's simply because when the poor girl goes to eat her first piece of steak, the guy always asks the question. And while she's trying to answer it, he eats his dinner, half of hers. And by the time she gets back to what's left, he says, we have to rush on, dear. And there she is. She's left.
Dorothy.
I didn't know it took that long to say yes or no.
They don't ask that kind of questions at dinner, Dorothy.
Paula, why does a woman assume that any time a man of 40 or over falls in love, he is going through what they call that age? Is this the only defense they can find? When a man over 40 falls in love, women say he's going through that age.
Uh-huh.
And I want to know if this is the only defense women can find for not being able to hold their husbands.
Well, George, I think that age for men is from the cradle to the grave. And I mean, if they only for a while they're doing fine.
Robin?
Well, if they do use that excuse, it's a pretty lame one. I blame the women in most cases when they can't hold their husbands. But I still maintain that men do go through that age, and it is around 40. And it is kind of depressing sometimes.
What? Men are sort of egotistical, not to say anything about them, but when they've lived 40 years, they figure they can afford to be senile as far as other women are concerned. And I think that it's just the truth that they're stating they do go through that age.
Well, how about this one? I'm sort of stumped by that. Why is it that even after you turn a woman down, she will persist in sending you birthday and Christmas presents, special delivery letters, telegrams? Why can't a woman take no for an answer? Eloise?
You are living in a dream world, Mr. Frazier. I've never known of a girl to do that when both of them are crazy about each other. And after he says no, she would not only give him a telegram, she wouldn't give him the right time.
Oh, I think you're stubborn personally. It happens all the time that women do that.
To you?
No, not to me. Robin?
Well, I know of such a case where a woman pursued a man by telephone and by wireless and so forth. And I think it's a great mistake, but I think it's because women, when they fall in love, go head over heels. They're not quite as frivolous as men. A man will recover very rapidly. A woman tries to hang on and hopes that she can more or less give the dead love a little excitement.
What do you say, Dorothy?
I say that sometimes they do it. I don't say it's a good thing to do, and I wouldn't do it myself, but sometimes they do it because often it works.
Yes, it does.
Well, wait, I'm sorry to stop the show here, George Frazier, but that's about all we have time for tonight. And it's been grand having you with us, and we really hope you'll come back soon again. Andre Baruch is waiting to announce the lineup for next week's show, but before I let go of the microphone, friends, let's hear your questions. And if you're lucky enough not to have any problems, well, we'd still like to hear from you. Have your comments and suggestions. We do read your letters, every one of them, although we just can't get around to answering all of them. So until next week at this same time, this is Paula Stone saying so long, friends.
Leave it to the girls to solve your problems of the heart. Leave it to five of the most glamorous and successful girls in America to bring you a half hour's entertainment each week. Make a note to listen at this same time next week, won't you? And don't forget, friends, Leave It to the Girls will pay $5 in victory stamps for every problem accepted for discussion on this program, plus a $25 victory bond as a bonus for the question used during the program, which, in the opinion of our male guest, stimulates the best all-around discussion. Send your letter to Leave It to the Girls, care of Mutual Broadcasting System, New York 18. Join us again next week for another half hour of fun with Paula Stone, Florence Pritchett, Robin Chandler, and Eloise McElhone. Our special guest, here to defend the male point of view, will be the well-known radio commentator, philosopher, and poet, Ted Malone. This is a Martha Roundtree production, and this is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
From December 8, 1945, an episode of the Mutual Network's Leave It to the Girls. If there are old-time radio programs you remember and would like to hear again, drop me a note at Dan, D-A-N, at radiofun.info. Thanks for listening. In the Old Time Radio Corner, I'm Dan Hughes.